All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Well, good evening. This is American Vindicta. We are on episode 35. Today is January the 4th, 2022. So strange to say 2022, and I'm having to write some documents here while I go, and I keep wanting to put 2021 on them. Anybody else have that problem? So today's topic, we're going to talk about gun control. We're going to talk about some of the knowledge that I have on it. We're going to go over some legal documents. Things that I believe you're going to find to be very familiar and also not so familiar, but very interesting nonetheless. Gun control, gun confiscation, these are things that have been done many, many times in history. You know, the lords of the manor, even way back in Old English law, which is so funny when we talk about gun confiscation, actually required that its citizenry had firearms, body armor, swords and ammunition, and food to be set aside for preparation and thereof if they had to be called upon by their lord within quick notice for a military-style service to protect the kingdom. If you did not have the bow and the arrow, the halberd, the sword, the shield, the helmet, you know, the ammunition eventually, the firearm eventually, it was actually a point of being punishable by death. Imagine if that were the way of thinking now. Imagine if you were required to have the right of protecting yourself and your country, but it be legally forced upon you. Imagine if the government actually did inspections to make sure you had your AR-15 with a red dot, or at the least bit that your AR-15 had serviceable iron sights. Would they want you to model yourself after the military, where you had some sort of an optical device on there, a light, a sling, proper ammunition, proper magazines, a certain amount of them? Old English law actually required this. Now we have politicians and dictators and authoritarians from around the world who want to take away the right to self-defense. They want to take away your right to be able to resist. And you have to ask yourself, the real question is, what is it that they're afraid we would resist? What implements of law or policy or just downright authoritarianism would these entities think we would resist? And how many people would actually go along with it? You may find that many people may actually just as well go along with dictatorship. Some people even request dictatorship. And in some instances, maybe it works, depending on a certain time, for a very limited amount of time and very limited power. If you look at Caesar, the original wanting for Caesar back in Rome, but that quickly, as all forms of power, went completely out of control and was corrupted. And the political leader that was put in power by the government, effectively the almost king or dictatorial leader, was granted all immunity and power, quickly abused the inhabitants of their kingdom, of their empire, and of the subsequent people that they were conquering. And that's why there were so many assassinations or assassination plots against multiple different Caesars. And I strongly suggest you do your research on the Caesars of Rome, just to learn what true dictatorship looks like. Everybody points at Nero, but there's some other figures out there who were just as bad as Nero. So, you know, we have to ask this question in the American mindset. What is it that the politicians could possibly want with my guns? Or why is it that they would not want me to have the right to defend myself or my family or my land, my God-given right, as we keep getting told? What would be the outcome of an entire nation not having their weapons confiscated, but just having a gun buyback program that eventually, if you don't sell your gun back, that gun will then become outlawed, and then you just be breaking the law. You see, there's a unique thing that the government and the politicians do is when they really want something, they'll set up policies to make it look like it's good for everybody, and that's a real slippery slope. And we're going to go over the mechanisms of a slippery slope. But they'll change laws to effectively get what they want eventually down the road. So that is going to be the direction for tonight's intriguing conversation. I hope you're ready. I hope you got your popcorn and your drink ready, because we are going to go down that dystopian road all over again. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because even back in December, I think it was December 1st of 2021, there was still yet again another bill that was proposed to Congress for banning of weapons. Every single year, Democrats and Republicans put forth bills to ban guns. And I'm going to go over some very historical quotes to back that up. And some of them you'll be surprised to hear, and probably most of them you won't. But my goal of this type of topic is to bring to you the knowledge so that, you know, while you're driving or jogging or running around doing whatever, you can at least have a little bit of information to put in your back pocket to consider later as you go to the hardware store, you go, you know, to Cabela's, and you look at that shiny new pistol or that cool new looking gun on the wall. Just give a short consideration that you may not have the ability to buy it next year. There are many countries right now who wish they did. And we're going to talk about it. We're going to go to a quick break, and then we're going to get right into it.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
And welcome back to American Vindicta. We are talking about gun control, America's favorite subject. So here we go. How the Nazis used gun control. by Stephen P. Holbrook, National Review. This was wrote in December of 2013. The perennial gun control debate in America did not begin here. The same arguments for and against were made in the 1920s and the chaos of Germany's Weimar Republic, which opted for gun registration. Law-abiding persons complied with the law, but the communists and Nazis committing acts of political violence did not. In 1931, Weimar authorities discovered plans for a Nazi takeover, in which Jews would be denied food and persons refusing to surrender their guns within 24 hours would be executed. They were written by Werner Best, a future Gestapo official. In reaction to such threats, the government authorized the registration of all firearms and the confiscation thereof, if required for quote-unquote public safety. The Interior Minister warned that the records must not fall into the hands of any extremist group. In 1933, the ultimate extremist group, led by Adolf Hitler, seized power and used the records to identify, disarm, and attack political opponents and Jews. Constitutional rights were suspended, and mass searches for and seizures of guns and dissident publications ensued. Police revoked gun licenses of Social Democrats and others who were not considered politically reliable. During the 5 years of repression that followed, society was cleansed by the National Socialist regime, and I do mean air quotes, cleansed. Undesirables were placed in camps where labor made them, quote, free, and normal rights of citizens were taken from the Jews. The Gestapo banned independent gun clubs and arrested their leaders. Gestapo Counsel Werner Best issued a directive to the police forbidding issuance of firearms permits to Jews. In 1938, Hitler signed a new gun control act. Now that many, quote, enemies of the state had been removed from society, some restrictions could be slightly liberalized, especially for Nazi Party members. But Jews were prohibited from working in the firearms industry, and 22 caliber hollow point ammunition was banned. Why 22 hollow point? It's very interesting. Anybody else remember when 22 almost went completely extinct in America about 10 years ago? All right, let's continue. Time had come to launch a decisive blow to the Jewish community, to render it defenseless so that its, quote, ill-gotten property could be redistributed as an entitlement to the German Volk. The German Jews were ordered to surrender all their weapons, and the police had the records of all who had registered them. Even those who gave up their weapons voluntarily were still turned over to the Gestapo. It's really hard to sit here and read when you consider what's going on in America right now and how many people seem to actually agree with this foolishness, isn't it? Is it not hard to anybody else? Because to me, I sit here and I read this and I have to stop even while I'm reading it to you, which messes me up as a narrator. But I just sit here and I go, my God, are we so foolish that we may actually repeat this? Are we so foolish as a people that we may actually allow our government to do this to us? Anyways, let's continue. This took place in the weeks before what became known as the Night of the Broken Glass, the Kristallnacht, which occurred in November 1938. The Jews were disarmed before it, minimizing any risk of resistance. is the strongest evidence that the program was planned in advance, and an incident was needed to justify the unleashing of the attack. That incident would be the shooting of a German diplomat in Paris by a teenage Polish Jew. Hitler directed propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels to orchestrate the Night of the Broken Glass. This massive operation, allegedly conducted as a search for weapons, entailed the ransacking of homes and businesses and the arson of synagogues. SS Chief Heinrich Himmler decreed that 20 years be served in a concentration camp by any Jew possessing a firearm. Rusty revolvers and bayonets from World War I were confiscated from Jewish veterans who had served with distinction. 20,000 Jewish men were thrown into concentration camps and had to pay ransoms to get released. The U.S. media covered the above events. And when France fell to the Nazi invasion in 1940, the New York Times reported that the French were deprived of rights such as free speech and firearm possession, just as the Germans had been. Frenchmen who failed to surrender their firearms within 24 hours were subject to the death penalty, which was, of course, then the shooting squad. No wonder that in 1941, just days before the Pearl Harbor attack, Congress reaffirmed the Second Amendment rights and prohibited gun registration. In 1968, bills to register guns were debated with opponents recalling the Nazi experience and supporters denying that the Nazis ever used registration records to confiscate guns. The bills were defeated, as every such proposal has been ever since, including recent universal background check bills. As in Weimar Germany, some well-meaning people today advocate severe restrictions, including bans and registration on gun ownership by law-abiding persons. Such proponents are in no sense Nazis, any more than were the Weimar officials who promoted similar restrictions. And it would be a travesty to compare today's situation to the horrors of Nazi Germany. Still, as history teaches us, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And I'll add a caveat to the end of that document. The people in the Weimar Republic who initially wanted this gun registry, this gun ban, it was in lieu of the Nazi Party. But you know what it did? It allowed an entire nation not to stand up against the Nazi Party either. And the coups, the attempted coups and assassinations that had originally happened against Adolf Hitler came from his own military. Which in a sense, when you really look at it, when it comes to any type of gun registry, you know, people throw around, well, it'll be law enforcement that'll do it. It'll be the National Guard. It'll be the military. That's costly. It's bad politics. And it's very dangerous for every person involved, both the victims of and the perpetrators for. However, we have people in this country who I think are at the right mindset right now to do two things. One, move to an area that is completely firearms, quote, free, as long as there is enough of a security force there that they deem to be worthy of being called a security force, because they don't want the police. So, good luck with that utopia, which in Greek means a place that cannot exist. And there's another group out there who is more than willing to have a civil war if you dare come after our guns. because we've seen in history what happens when you come after guns in other nations. Now, following Germany's defeat in World War I, the Weimar Republic passed very strict gun control laws in an attempt both to stabilize the country and to comply with the Versailles Treaty of 1919, and the laws that in fact required the surrender of all guns to the government. Now, these laws remained in effect until 1921, when the German Parliament had relaxed gun restrictions and put into effect a strict firearm licensing scheme. These strict license regulations foreshadowed Adolf Hitler's rise to power. And if you read the 1938 Nazi gun laws closely and compare them to earlier 1928 Weimar gun legislation as like a straightforward exercise of statutory interpretation, several conclusions become clear. First, with regard to possession and carrying of firearms, the Nazi regime relaxed the gun laws that were in place in Germany at the same time the Nazis seized power. Second, the Nazi gun laws of 1938 specifically banned Jewish persons from obtaining a license to manufacture firearms or ammunition. Thirdly, approximately 8 months after enacting the 1938 Nazi gun laws, Hitler imposed regulations prohibiting Jewish persons from possessing any dangerous weapons, including a firearm. Any dangerous weapon, which is left up to interpretation, a pointy stick, a heavy rock. The difficult question is how to characterize the Nazi treatment of the Jewish population for the purposes of evaluating Hitler's position on gun control. The truth is, the question itself is absurd. The Nazis sought to disarm and kill the Jewish population. They wanted to exterminate them. Their treatment of Jews is, in the sense, orthogonal to their gun control views. Nevertheless, if forced to take a position, it seems that the Nazis aspired to a certain relaxation of gun registration laws, but that was for the, quote, law-abiding German citizen, for those who were not in their minds, the enemies of the National Socialist State, or in other words, Jews, communists, homosexuals, people with, you know, mental disabilities, gypsies, people that were not German citizens of the Volk. And then you also had anyone who spoke out against the party, even certain Christian pastors and churches. I mean, honestly, if you did not align at the end of the day with the Nazi party, you were against them. And you could not be against them. If you were against them, you're going to the camps. Here then is the best tentative and bizarre conclusion. Some of the pro-gunners are right. The Nazi gun registration argument is probably wrong. What is clear, though, is that history, the history of the Weimar and Nazi gun laws, has not received enough critical attention from historians. And what we really need now is more historical research and reliable scholarship. Now, that's an expert from the Scholarship Law of Columbia. And I agree to some of this, but I'll tell you this much. Let's take a look at it like this. After World War II, after the Nazi rise to power and the Nazi Empire, and after us fighting the communists, fighting the Japanese, the Chinese, the North Koreans, the Russians, and blah, blah, blah. After all of this, all these dictators, all these rises to power of all these evil men, We still have politicians today who wake up and think taking the guns away from you is still a good idea. It's like if they never looked into their history book and went, wow, maybe we shouldn't be like Cuba. Maybe they should read about Pol Pot. Maybe they should read in general about our history. Because, as I have said before, we are doomed to fail it if we do not recognize that history is not really something that is dead in the past. It is a historical annotation of human triumph and human mistakes to the point of mass murdering to, I guess you could say, genocidal mistakes. And it's not hard just to flip back in a history book or, hey, DC, you're surrounded by historians. You're surrounded by them. Every congressperson, every congressman and congressman, congresslady, I get so confused now. Can I call you a man? Can I call you a woman? Every congressperson, how about that? Go to the World War II Holocaust Museum if you want an eye-opening experience. I went. I strongly suggest every adult in America at some point go there and realize what man is willing to do to himself. We are all children of God. And the moment we start to divide ourselves to think that we are different or that I am better than you, the seed of Satan is implanted, and then all types of great misery and death can come from that. And, you know, sadly, that is inevitable. But one of the surest ways of me not allowing that to happen to my country, to myself, or to my family is to own guns. You know, if a foreign military came over here attempting to take over our country, I'm not going to charge at them with sharp sticks or throw stones at them. Anyway, now, when it comes to dictators, people will ask, you know, how many dictators took the guns away from the people and then harassed and almost executed the entire population? There are plenty within the 20th century that did that. Alex Jones goes on an amazing rant about that, so I would just tell you to look up the Alex Jones gun control rant. He is extremely knowledgeable and very, very correct with what he says. And more savvy dictators realize that having a popular support was better than total subjugation. And guns were controlled, but to some degree, but generally available still within their realm of their country. In Tito's Yugoslavia, guns were regulated, but generally available. Saddam's Iraq had no problems with people owning guns, and neither did Libya, and so on and so forth. Even in the Soviet Union, guns were, from my understanding, legal to a certain degree. Besides, after World War II, there was no possible way of eliminating all of the guns from global circulation at that point. You know, I mean, we talk about guns that were circulating the globe that governments don't like. I mean, hell, after the Red Scare was over and the USSR broke up, how many nukes and scuds made their way across the world? I mean, you know, we have politicians who in this country will damn you up and down about owning a suppressor or a 50 cal or an automatic weapon. All beautiful things, great things. And then they'll go to some, heathenistic tribe out in the middle of the desert somewhere that wants to cut people's heads off and say, "Hey, you look like a good group of lads. Would you like some hellfire rockets?" And make a deal. Or they'll go to a completely anti-Christian country that openly decapitates people in their capital to the point that they even had like henchmen needed with, you know, expertise in decapitation in an ad in a paper. That is not a lie. I'm talking about Saudi Arabia, who also sits on the Human Rights Council. Isn't that hilarious? But these same people, these same politicians who every year talk about taking your guns, they sell real weapons of mass destruction and actual military-style assault weapons, belt-fed machine guns and rockets and all types of vehicles of war to other people around the world. But you're not allowed to have it. Not unless you have a lot of money. Isn't that also something really funny? You can own a Class 3 license if you have a lot of money, and then you can own automatic weapons, and it'd be completely legal. You can own tanks in America that shoot real projectiles. You can own your own fighter jet if you have the money. But the people with the money, that's not really the ones with the problem. It's we the people who aren't billionaires or, you know, multimillionaires. We don't have the money to own these weapons. But during the Revolutionary War, they sure did. They even had their own privateers, their own battleships. Anyways, I'm going to climb off my my soapbox. Some more of the mortalitarian dictators preferred completely disarming the populace, which is in the case of Mao Zedong, Chairman Mao. And there are actually, I don't know why, it's like a plethora of Asian dictators who were very, very hard about the population owning any type of firearm to the point, I mean, like they obviously would go out there and they would kill everybody. And they were like, if you look up some of the Asian dictators that are within that side of the world, I mean, they were seriously sadistic and cruel to their people after they took their guns, by the way. You know, some of these dictators also went for a selective approach like Adolf Hitler, where there was a stark contrast between undesirables, which are Germans, who were banned from having them on the pain of death, and Germans who could freely have them. So, in general, wholesale banning of guns is not necessary for a dictatorship. What is necessary for a dictatorship is, in part, the military, and in large part, the popular support, or being able to completely subjugate the population. But this is really more rare. If you take a better look at it, most people under dictatorships in broad terms supported it and do not find it worthwhile to risk their lives in an uprising, even if they can freely have whatever they like in their country, just like guns. Now, registering guns and then soon afterwards progressively taking them by restricting the gun laws further and further and further, which can be done once guns are registered. That actually happened mostly in democratic countries. They did not, as a rule, become dictatorships after that. If you look at some of these countries, like Canada, America, Great Britain, Australia, when they started to take the guns away from the citizens, or when they started to restrict what can and can be bought, every couple of years, it progressively got more intrusive and it got more restrictive. And every time the government would gain more power, they would refuse to relinquish that power unless brought to court by a very heavily sponsored suit. And, you know, most of the times, I don't know, we didn't get them back. You know, the 1994 gun ban bill, the assault weapons ban bill, you know, if it wasn't for the fact that it had a 10-year limit on it, we may still be facing under that. And the guy who's sitting in the presidency right now, even though he may not know where he is right now, Joe Biden, he's the one who helped really caveat all of this. He's a very staunch anti-gun supporter. And we elected him. For God's sake, we elected him. And this is the same man, after he got the Democratic Party's nominee for the presidential elect, he went to Beto O'Rourke and said, I want you to be my confiscation in chief. Because if I win, you're going to be on my team. So far, Beto, Robert, is not on the team yet, but don't think he won't be. I think Beto O'Rourke is just waiting for the right time for him to jump on his skateboard and ride back into the limelight like a supervillain and come to take your guns again. God forbid, right? We're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, you will own nothing, and you will love it. And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today, where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have. Access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready-Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
And welcome back. This is American Vindicta. We are still talking about gun control or gun bans or gun restrictions, whatever you want to call this. I'm going to read you an excerpt from the Harvard Law Review. It's titled The Mechanisms of the Slippery Slope. And this is by Eugene Volokh. Now, I cherry picked a few things in here because it's such a exhaustively wrote paper, but I strongly recommend that you go and research this paper yourself and read it. There's some really good points of view in here. In terms of the slippery slope, I'm not going to cover the entire thing. So if you get confused by some of the things that I'm saying that I'm reading, just go to the document and read it for yourself. All right, so let's begin. Does it make sense for someone to oppose gun registration, A, because of registration might make it look likely that others will eventually enact gun confiscation, B. So the A and the B are the elements of a slippery slope. A and B are logically distinguishable, but can A nonetheless help to lead to B? What this whole thing is getting to is you have two points of view here. You have something A that can help society, but it's a foot in the door for the government to eventually lead to B, a repressive approach upon society where things get banned, become illegal, or harm Americans. Today, when the government doesn't know where the guns are, gun confiscation would require searching all homes, which would be very expensive, relying heavily on informers, which may be unpopular. If guns aren't registered, such searches will probably also violate the Fourth Amendment. But if A is done before B, and gun owners have registered their guns, by the time the gun ban is enacted, then the registration will provide the probable cause needed to search the owner's houses. And the why he's saying that is A and B. Okay, so A is the registration of your guns. B is making all the guns illegal. So if you have these guns and the government decides to go into your house to look for these illegal items and you have them, then they didn't violate your Fourth Amendment. That is the broad spectrum of that. Legally, it's still a very gray area, but hey, we're talking about the government. They live in the gray area. At least when I was there, we did. Now, this is a quote from Richard Harris, who was a reporter at large for The New Yorker, and it's over handguns. And this is from July 26, 1976. All right, 1976. We're going to have to take one step at a time. And the first step is necessarily, given the political realities, going to be very modest. The first problem is to slow down the increasing number of handguns being produced and sold in this country. The second problem is to get handguns registered. And the final problem is to make possession of all handguns and handgun ammunition, wait for it, except for the military, policemen, licensed security guards, licensed sporting clubs, and licensed gun collectors, totally illegal. And that was a thought from the 1970s. Oh my God. Please help us. Gun seizures have occurred either as a component of mass arrests of political opponents, or as a disarmament of an already conquered populace. And no gun seizure has ever prevented the people from mounting a successful mass insurrection and counter coup, or stopping a dictatorial coup. They've mainly been measures by dictators to prevent long and costly insurgencies. And I'm telling you right now, this little quote has a lot of weight to it. Look at what we just did in Iraq and Afghanistan for 20 years. Every house we'd go to, the man of the house, each house was allowed to have one AK-47 and one fully loaded magazine. If you had anything other than that, we confiscated it, we broke it, we dismantled it, we took the weapon apart, found the firing mechanisms and threw them in all directions. Because the people still had the right to defend themselves. But if they were a gun collector or whatever other excuse, nope, we, the U.S. military, took it. And part of that was, you know, we didn't want to give the enemy more ammunition and more guns. We wanted to strangle them by the amount of guns and rockets and mortars and ammunition that they could use against us. It never worked, but it damn sure turned the population against us when we would do it. It did not get the desired result, because what we ended up doing was creating more insurgents. And that's going to be a lesson this government needs to understand, is that if you try to take away the weapons from Americans, guess what you're going to create? You're going to create an Iraq and Afghan war in America, but you have so many Iraq and Afghan veterans like me that you're going to have to deal with in a very heavily, heavily weaponized populace. That war is never going to end, and you'll never win that war. And they know they'll never win that war. They know that they'll never be able to conquer our hearts and minds. They'll never be able to use counterinsurgency operations. Maybe they'll be like the drone in chief, and they'll try and, you know, hellfire you from 30,000 feet up because they're too much of a cowards to fight in front of you. And that's not a diss on any drone pilots out there. All right. Let's talk about something fun. Let's talk about some quotes that I have here. Let me pull this material up real quick. Okay, so here's some quotes from some avid gun control enthusiasts. Here we go. Ordinary citizens don't need guns, as having guns doesn't serve the state. Heinrich Himmler of the SS, who was in the 30s and 40s the head of all law enforcement in Nazi Germany. What good fortune for those in power that people do not think. Adolf Hitler. All political power comes from the barrel of a gun. The Communist Party must command all the guns. That way, no guns can ever be used to command the party. Chairman Mao Zedong. If the opposition, the citizens, disarms, well, that's well and good. If it refuses to disarm, we shall disarm it ourselves. Joseph Stalin. The cult of xenophobia is the cheapest and surest method of obtaining from the masses the ignorant and savage patriotism which puts the blame for every political folly or social misfortune upon the foreigner. Mao Zedong. The most foolish mistake we could possibly make would be to allow the subject races to possess arms. History shows that all conquerors who have allowed their subject races to carry arms have prepared their own downfall by so doing. Indeed, I would go so far as to say that the supply of arms to the underdogs is a sine qua non for the overthrow of sovereignty. So let's not have any native militia or native police. German troops alone will bear the sole responsibility for the maintenance of law and order throughout the occupied Russian territories, and a system of military strong points must be evolved to cover the entire occupied country. Adolf Hitler. Government begins at the end of the gun barrel. Mao Zedong. How about this one? Our power does not know liberty or justice. Our power does not know liberty or justice. It is established on the destruction of the individual will. Vladimir Lenin. And for all you out there who know nothing about Antifa, Mao Zedong and Vladimir Lenin are the epochs, the worshipful masters of Antifa. They put these people on everything, and they repeat them constantly. In these United States, we have people that support communism. Unreal. Here, let's go to the next one. The people of various provinces are strictly forbidden to have in their possessions any swords, bows, spears, firearms, or other types of arms. The possession of unnecessary implements make difficult the collections of taxes and dues and tends to foment uprising. Toyotomi Hideyoshi, dictator of Japan in 1588. How about this one? Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15 and your AK-47. Former Texas Congressman Beto Robert O'Rourke, who sought the Democratic Party's nomination for president in 2020 in reply to a moderator's question about his mandatory gun buyback plan during a primary debate. He said, hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15 and your AK-47. Government gets to keep theirs, though. And that madman almost won a Senate seat in Texas. And that's the same guy who just said this, that is on Biden's team, eventually. What about this? I don't believe people should be able to own guns. Who could have said such a stupid thing like that? Well, how about former President Barack Obama? During a conversation with economist and author John Lott Jr. at the University of Chicago Law School in the 1990s. If I could have gotten an outright ban, Mr. and Miss America, turn in your guns, I would have. Senator Dianne Feinstein, the author of the 1994 assault weapons ban. Here's a good one. We're bending the laws as far as we can to ban an entirely new class of guns. Rahm Emanuel, President Obama's former chief of staff and senior advisor to Bill Clinton. Here we go. We're going to keep going with this. We know that other countries, in response to one mass shooting, have been able to craft laws that almost eliminate mass shootings. Friends of ours, allies of ours, Great Britain, Australia, countries like ours. So we know there are ways to, wink, wink, prevent it. Barack Obama. Banning guns addresses a fundamental right of all Americans to feel safe. Senator Dianne Feinstein, who surrounds herself with bodyguards. How about this from Hillary Clinton? We cannot let a minority of people, and that's what it is a minority of people, hold a viewpoint that terrorizes the majority of people. How about this one from her husband, Bill Clinton, another former president? When we got organized as a country and wrote a fairly radical constitution with a radical Bill of Rights, giving radical amounts of freedom to Americans, it was assumed that Americans who had that freedom would use it responsibly. When personal freedom is being abused, you have to move to limit it. If the personal freedoms guaranteed by the Constitution inhibit the government's ability to govern the people, we should look to limit those freedoms. Bill Clinton in 1993, 1 year prior to the assault weapons ban. And just for a little bit of historical reference, consider the massacre at Wounded Knee in South Dakota on December 29, 1890. After the United States 7th Cavalry confiscated the firearms of a group of Lakota Sioux for their, quote, own safety and protection at the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, 297 Indians were murdered. After the majority of the Sioux had peacefully turned in their firearms, the cavalry began shooting and wiped out the camp. 200 of the dead were women and children. That's it for tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, do not think we live in this-will-never-happen-to-me world. I'm Doug Thornton. This is American Vindicta. Out. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.